This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. This is your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the NFL wire site from the USA Today's family of sites. My co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's NFL site covering the Arizona Cardinals, and we are in episode 234. We're in the fun part of the preseason. We've got one game under our belts. We have a second one coming up, and it is near the end of the technical training camp. The Cardinals will be breaking camp at the end of this week, and so we have some things to talk about. Obviously, recording on a Tuesday night, the last game was last Thursday, so we don't want to spend a lot of time really at all breaking down the game from what we saw. But Seth, what were some basic takeaways that you had from their preseason opener, which was a 17-13 when they won their first game with Cliff Kingsbury as their coach, and it was kind of the joke. Now, I didn't hear this in the press box, but it was a comment made on a video for AZ Central, how many times has a Cliff Kingsbury coached defense held a team to only 13 points?
Yeah, and I mean, it was an interesting game. I think the Chargers played a little bit into the Cardinals' hands at certain spots. You saw a little bit of them go away from the running game, which seemed to be working, and you wrote about that a little bit on Tuesday, that the Cardinals aren't concerned quite yet about their run defense, but as fans, maybe we can be.
yes, we can be, especially after last season.
And so, you know, that was a bit of an eye opener. And then, you know, they kind of got into the red zone and they started to throw the ball, and you're like, oh, okay, this helps the Cardinals. But then you look at, you know, the first team offense. I thought right off the bat, the command of the offense that Kyler Murray has is just on a different level. I mean, there's definitely going to be rookie times that come out where you're like, oh, he's a rookie. You know, he's just getting used to the NFL. But there were times where, I mean, he was throwing the ball. That throw to Damier Bird, I think it was the third throw, where Damier's coming out of his break on like an a out route, and the ball's literally waiting for him, and he catches it, gets 2 feet in bounds, and then is like, oh, I could turn and run, and kind of like drifted out of bounds, then got pushed out. And that throw was kind of like the throw that it's like this guy is so far into this offense already that he's making throws that rookies just don't make. I mean, he's making throws on timing routes that it takes years to develop. And that just was, you know, what you saw from a guy who has basically been in this offense since he was a freshman in high school.
Yeah.
Or similar to this offense. And that is, that's going to be fun to watch. I think we obviously have some concerns that we'll discuss tonight, but for the most part, I think you just have to be really excited about how good he looks in that offense.
And for me, in that preseason game, you saw basically what you need to see. Yeah, there's some defensive issues that you're gonna pin it to the post, to the bulletin board, just in case that comes up. You know, the preseason game one. Oh, that's a lot of rushing yards. But we've seen that the Cardinals don't know how to defend Tyrod Taylor anyway. Historically, Kyler looked great. The second team offense executed the 2-minute drive well, so you felt good about Brett Hundley. A couple of players stood out, so you kind of got, honestly, everything that, with the exception of the questions on the first team defense, everything that you would like to see in a preseason opener, you got to see. You got to see the quarterback look good. The first team offense moved. You saw some individual players do things, and then in the end, they execute. Here, your back of the roster guys executed to win, which builds things. Granted, it doesn't mean anything for long term, but it also shows that if you've got players who know how to execute a game plan to be able to win, that's good for morale. It's because honestly, winning a preseason game doesn't mean anything, but it's definitely better than losing a preseason game. That's meaningless, and so you start building some of that winning culture, if you want to do that even games that don't matter at least a little bit, is what I liked about that. But that's the extent of what we're going to talk about the game itself. We will talk about players who have seen their stock go up or go down, but we're not going to talk much about the preseason game at all. That's because there's a lot of other stuff to go on. So here's we've got two not so great things to talk about. Is there was another executive DUI. Darius Filon is no longer on the roster after an arrest. So we're going to talk about the fallout, and we're going to talk about, is there a culture problem within the organization? What's the fallout for the release of Darius Filon? What does the defensive line look like? Are there any players that they need to target in free agency? Marcus Gilbert's missed some time. Is there concern over that? We're going to talk about the rising and falling stock of players, and then finally, since we've got a preseason game coming up, recording on a Tuesday night, they play Thursday evening. We're gonna talk about what we see or what we want to see in the game with the Raiders. So let's get started with this. The best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Let's talk about the culture problem. We know that a year ago, Steve Keim, general manager, was hit with a DUI, an extreme DUI in Chandler. Cardinals moved swiftly in terms of what they punished him. They fined him $200,000. He was suspended 5 weeks. He had jail time. He was expected to plead guilty. That was part of the thing. He's got to own up to it, which he did. He did everything he was supposed to, but it was a black eye for the organization. It happened again. This time it's their executive vice president and COO, Ron Miniger. He gets hit with a DUI, with a suspicion of DUI over the weekend in Chandler. More details we don't have yet, other than the fact that the Cardinals have come out and said there will be serious consequences. Is there a culture problem within this organization? Is this something that goes beyond? Was the keeping of Steve Keim, did it influence Miniger's decision? Like, is there something deeper other than we're just having a really crappy time and people are making stupid decisions?
You know, I think it's two separate incidents. This one is a case of a front office. You know, I understand he's high up in the organization, but a front office guy making, a dumb decision. I think the Keim thing was such a big deal because, one, he had had the previous DUI, albeit, 20 years previous. And then the other thing was there was always kind of this – what's the word I'm looking for? There was always this whole idea during the Bruce Arians era of the post-game drinks in the parking lot. And, you know, he was – BA was always mixing drinks and you know, kind of that – you know, I hate to put it in this tone, but that kind of beer league softball, hey, win or lose, we booze type thing. And that was, you know, that was the modicum of what it seemed like that group was. And then Keim gets busted and you're like, man, you make a lot of $1 million here to not be hiring a driver. And so is it a culture problem? I guess it would be a culture problem if this was another party that was being attended. Like, we never really got the details of the Keim party because it was 4th of July and he was allegedly at a party. So if this was another like Cardinals event party, then maybe there is a culture problem because maybe they need to take it upon themselves to take care of the car situation for all of the people attending the party or something of that nature. But, you know, for the most part, I feel like it's two separate incidents, because I don't know how much Miniger and Keim actually hang out or, like, actually do stuff together. Where are they running together and this is, you know, a problem? I guess if that is the case, then maybe, yeah, there is a culture problem within the organization. But it just feels like two separate incidents where two guys that just work for the same organization made the same dumb mistake, unfortunately.
And here's the thing, that there is, whether there's an actual culture problem, what we do now have is someone, another person connected to Michael Bidwill, having this happen. Make no mistake, the Cardinals came down hard on Keim. Some people don't think they came down hard enough. Now, at the same time, financially, it would have been rough to fire Keim, especially since he just signed an extension that took him through 2022. However, while organizationally, Keim and Miniger probably don't cross paths a lot because they do different things. Because Keim is the football side of operations, and Miniger handles the more of the business side. But at the same time, where we've got this, if you've got the nexus, if you want to call it, it's Michael Bidwill. Now, Michael Bidwill hasn't been pegged with a DUI. However, a guy that he spends a lot of time with in Keim, and a guy I'm sure he spends a lot of time with at the organization in Miniger, that raises eyebrows just in terms of appearance. This isn't saying that, and here's for me. The situation when it comes with the Miniger situation is this. Now that you've had two people within the front office have this happen, and then if you want to add in, so you've had it at all different levels. You've had it at the player level with Michael Floyd. You've had it at the front office level with Steve Keim, and now you've had it even further with you in the organization, the front office, the executives in Miniger, is that now it feels like the Cardinals, that Bidwill and the Cardinals need to come out and not only make a statement with the punishment or the fine or the suspension or firing, whatever they end up doing, but it's almost like they have to go outside the organization, something that really no organization needs to do, go out and explain to the public what things they are putting in place for that. Do they have a service? Like, locally, guys on the radio said that they know that within the Diamondbacks organization, they have a service that it's just, hey, there's this number you call, you have a driver. No questions asked. They'll take care of your car. They'll just get you. They just want you to get home. Do the Cardinals have something like that in place?
I thought the NFLPA did, but I could be.
The NFL did have, like, a few years ago, I know when the whole John Abraham thing came out, I think there was the notion that there was an account with Uber, but players are...
Oh, that's the PA, though. That's the NFLPA. True. Yeah, you're true, right. True. So you may be right. It may have to be an organizational thing.
We'll just say, okay, so because this has come up more than once, we are now offering this, and then say kind of policy, if this thing happens, you are done because we are offering this. And so it just becomes a distraction. And unfortunately, with the last 24 months with the Cardinals, everything wrong has happened. So they've taken a dump on the field. So they've taken a hit in terms of football quality. They had the hiring and firing of a coaching staff. They brought in an unorthodox coaching candidate, and then you keep having these things happen. So you have the we'll talk about this, the arrest for Darius Filon. You have all sorts of distractions, and unfortunately, while I don't think it's a culture problem, because I think it went in organizations this large, because I would dare say, in almost any organization, any large organization, you probably will find that there have been two people within that organization have a DUI in the last year. I would probably say that's not uncommon in the corporate world. Just guessing. It's probably different in my education world because it's there are people are held to different standards. But if you look at most corporate settings, I would not be surprised, especially here in Arizona, with the amount of DUIs that, because it is a place of, it is a point of emphasis with law enforcement, that you probably wouldn't be surprised to go to a Honeywell or any of these other places and have two people have had a DUI in the last year.
Yeah, and the other thing is, and the reason I look at it is not a culture problem, is that you have, you know, like you said, it's coming from within different sections of the organization. However, this does make the organization look like an issue overall, in terms of kind of this joke, and you know, we're going to get into Darius Filon, but when you're talking about two high profile arrests in the organization within, what was it, even 48 hours? It was 24 hours, wasn't it?
Straight days. It was just, it was dumb. It was terrible timing for a team that's really trying to get
things turned around and in the right direction. And I truly don't think it's a culture problem, because again, as we'll discuss with Filon, that's a whole separate issue. However, it makes the culture of the team at this point mirror the play on the field from last year. All it does is kind of reinforce this, that's a loser organization. When you have these situations all basically within a one-year period of one another.
Coming up next on the Rise of C-Red podcast, we're going to talk a little bit more about another situation where there's been fall, and that's the arrest and release of Darius Filon. That's coming up next on the Rise of C-Red podcast. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And there's more fallout. Darius Filon hit some legal troubles. He is no longer on the team. So we're going to talk about the fallout from that. What it means to the roster now, how it affects the play on the field, and whether they need to do anything. So Filon, who by all accounts has been playing and practicing extremely well, apparently decided to make a really dumb decision. There was an incident at a strip club, outside a strip club back in May, and it involved a dancer to his car where there was money, and he points a gun at her and at another friend, saying, basically threatening them. Something happened. We don't know all the details, but he gets it. So months later, so the incident doesn't get reported to the police for several weeks. They investigate, and now the arrest is made. And the Cardinals move swiftly, which tells you something about the situation. Or maybe this is a reaction to something else. So he's arrested, and then on the next day after practice, on Saturday, they announce he is released. Financially, it's not a good thing, because they take a hit completely in the salary cap, so they gain no space this year. They're going to take a $2 million hit next year because it's a post June 1st cut, and so they lose a starter without gaining any cap space, and then they lose $2 million next year. The fallout is now, in terms of on the field, Zach Allen is now thrust into a starting lineup, and now the depth is tested. It was another case of, for me, when I got them, like, are you kidding me? Really? Of all the things. We had the Robert Condici saga, a guy who was vetted and he turns out to be a knucklehead still. Darius Filon appears to be fine, no issues, but then he's going to strip clubs and pointing guns at strip. Like, come on! This is not normal stuff. But now the Cardinals have to deal with yet another thing, and it also affects the play on the field. What is the fallout of this whole situation with Darius Filon?
It just doesn't make sense. Like, I texted you about this. You know, you're on the books, you've kind of gotten this life-changing money. Because, I mean, he was, I believe, a six-round pick out of Arkansas. So it's not like he was, you know, I mean, he made maybe $1 million over that time frame, but it's not like he was really paid in a huge way. And, you know, now all of a sudden he's set up for life. Like, the dude just got paid for life. He, you know, after, even if it's just the 2 years with the Cardinals and he bust out, he's done. And now, like, I don't know, you go put yourself in a position where you can be arrested and then you get arrested. Obviously the Cardinals either know something or B, don't even want to take a chance with it. Like, they're like, look, this is now a one strike policy when it comes to arrest. At least for the players, I guess. Right. Like, so, when you look at it like that, I would tend to assume because it was, I mean, is it considered, I don't know how it's worded. Is it considered domestic violence because it was a female, or is it just aggravated assault because it was not his, like, partner?
I think it was just considered aggravated assault is, I think, how it ended up being.
So, I mean, whether or not, however they phrase it, like, he attacked a woman, allegedly. Obviously, we need to put that in there because, I mean, he's not guilty in a court of law at this point. But they had enough to go on to arrest him. And I believe he was in jail, wasn't he?
Yes. They took him into custody. And
so, like, this wasn't like those, you know, some of the situations you see where, like, they pick him up and arrest him and then he's just out. Like, he spent some time in county. So there was obviously something that drew the concerns of, one, the police, but two, obviously there's something in the report, or the cops let them know something more about what's going on or what's going to come out that made them just concerned enough that they just don't even want to deal with it. And that's the thing with Filon. Like, I went back and looked. I don't see anything in his past. Like, that doesn't mean he's an angel or he's never gotten in trouble, but I don't see any, like, arrests, suspensions at Arkansas while he was in college. Like, there was nothing. Like, there's not that. This isn't Robert Kimdiche type situation, right? Like,
or
that's,
even, or this isn't even, say, a Deshaun Jackson who had rumors of having connections with gangs before, even though he himself hadn't been in trouble. That there were rumors that the people around him were trouble.
Right, and so that's the hard thing with this is that the car, like you said, they move swiftly. Like, news dropped on Friday and Saturday, like, you, that camp was over on Saturday, and you're like, oh, I got to write this still in the stadium this time.
Right, yes, they did not delay.
And so you're looking at it like, okay, like, they, I don't know, it just, it, for the cut to happen that quickly. And obviously we don't know if they're going to try to attack and get some of that money back or anything like that. But for the cut to happen that quickly and for them to now eat, at least initially, his contract and his dead salary, it tells you that there was a big enough concern from the team that this was just not something they wanted to deal with.
Now, here was my initial thing, and I had to go back and look to see what the timing was. Here's the reason for the response about this, if you go back to Desmond Harrison. Now, Desmond Harrison, that cut didn't make that didn't surprise anyone considering he was a waiver claim. They had basically there was very little skin in the game with Harrison because there was no risk to signing him. They could cut him, and then the arrest warrant goes out in North Carolina for something to happen out there. That was an easy cut. The Darius Filon one, it was a little bit surprising that they would at least, I thought, considering his place on the team, that they would wait things out. However, I think this goes back to Darryl Washington. I think Darryl Washington changed things for them in terms of legal things when it comes to things other than alcohol-related events, which can be considered. So, especially if you look at it, when a DUI happens or there's drunk driving, not only is it a terrible decision, but that is also, if you look at it at the personal level, okay, this person has a problem, and so we'll have to deal with this somehow. Darryl Washington is something completely different. He had already had the one drug suspension, the substance abuse suspension in 2012. And then he gets the new contract. Then in 2013, he has the domestic abuse charge. And then the Cardinals waited out. They still paid him out that $10 million option bonus in 2014. And then he burned them again with another. So I think what happened is Darryl Washington, and in particular for Steve Keim, Darryl Washington ruined. So they learned from the Darryl Washington situation. We knew when we talked about on this podcast 6 years ago, about how it was the perfect time. So they could have cut ties with Washington and paid Carlos Dansby and kept him over those next few years. And we, even after that 2012 season, you know, that was kind of no one was saying that. It ended up being what was a smart thing because after he had the 4-game suspension, you knew that he wasn't exactly trustworthy. He has the legal issue. Then they, because of how talented he was, okay, we'll work through this. They pay him the $10 million, and then he burns them again. So I think the Darryl Washington situation has burned them when it comes to anything legal. They went ahead and paid him $10 million. Now, they got some of that money back from what I understand, but they paid him $10 million after the fact, and I think now there's like, no, we're not going to deal with this. If there is sufficient evidence there from their standpoint, okay, we're done. We're done completely. And I think that's the case right there. Now, what's the fallout on the field? Now we get Zach Allen. Now, this is going to be exciting. Zach Allen is a guy that the Cardinals were really, really high on. But here's the thing. Filon is a quality player. He very talented. He's not flashy. But now, what do you think about having Zach Allen in the starting line? Because now it's going to look like we're going to have Kyler Murray, potentially Keyshawn Johnson, Byron Murphy, and Zach Allen all in the starting lineup.
And even if they're not starting, quote unquote, I mean, Murphy's going to play at least for the first six games, 70%+ of the snaps. Keyshawn's going to play 70%+ of the snaps. These guys are going to play a ton of snaps. And so you hope this is not akin to last year where we saw the rookies play a ton, but it was that they played poorly. You know, that was one of my biggest critiques about last year was, you know, oh, the Cardinals finally, you know, let their rookies play. I'm like, yeah, but playing badly doesn't really do anything for anybody. Like, it just means you're a bad team. And so that's the biggest thing is, are these guys going to be able to, you know, be at a level where they're contributing to a winning football? And that's the concern about losing Filon. I mean, Filon was a guy that he was a consistent player. He was a guy that could give you 60% to 65% of snaps. And then all of a sudden your Zach Allen snaps are, you know, only at the 40% to 50% mark, you know, with his rotation with Filon, Gunter. And so now you're going to ask a rookie in Zach Allen to start at that 65% of the snaps, maybe 60. And then, but more concerning to that is then who backs up Zach Allen?
Which, as right? of right so, now, is Terrell McClain. And he's the only...
And he is at best used, based on his age and kind of weight situation, he's at best used when he's playing like 20 to 25% of snaps a game.
Right, right. And but now Cliff Kingsbury comes out that he's going to have to play a prominent role. That a prominent role, that means he's going to be... He's now the top reserve.
And yeah, he's their four all of a sudden. And then you have a guy like Miles Brown? I can't remember.
Miles Brown is the offensive line. So you got Miles Brown, Michael Dogby, Sterling Bailey, and Pasoni Tacini. He's back.
He's back to get cut again. Poor guy. I thought Dogby looked good in the game a little bit, so like that's good. But again, I guess if you're splitting those reps and McClain's getting like closer to 30% and then Dogby and maybe, you know, Brown are getting like 15 and 5, I maybe you're okay. But it just changes the whole dynamic, because the whole thing with Allen was gonna be he's kind of your first off the bench guy. And all of a sudden, you know, he can go in for Gunter, or he can go in for Filon, or he can go in for Peters, and one of those guys slides down to nose, right? So now all of a sudden you're talking about the flexibility's lost a little bit. You've lost a huge percentage of the expected starting snaps and played snaps. And so maybe Allen is as good, if not better, then Filon. I don't know if he will be as a rookie, but let's just say he is. Now all of a sudden your depth is worse, and now your rotation is kind of affected. And so more so than just losing Filon the starter, you've lost now the key to your depth, which was Zach Allen, because he's moving into that starting role. And as you said, I mean, no offense, I like the Terrell McClain signing. I like him as a player. But again, you're talking about a guy that you wanted playing maybe 20% of the snaps. I mean, you're talking about a guy you wanted to play 10 to 15 snaps a game, and now you're talking 25 to 30 snaps a game. And that could, you know, that could wane on the team, and that's the unfortunate reality of the fallout of Filon more than anything else, is that the depth and the rotation takes a hit, because the way Zach Allen was producing in camp, you really liked him kind of in that Josh Morrow role, right, where he could come in and give you those high-end energy snaps early, you know, and then maybe as the season went along, play a little more.
Now, here's the thing. Do they have enough? Ultimately, do they have enough? Well, that's a maybe. That's a maybe. And ultimately, I think it comes down to their starting lineup is now questionable. Their starting lineup before was okay. You felt confident because you had three guys along that line, three veterans across that line. Corey Peters, you know you're going to get consistent play. Rodney Gunter, now in his fifth year, you think you can expect him to play solid. Filon, he's pretty talented. That's a good start. You bring in the potential of Zach Allen, the veteran presence of a McClain. But now you have to, if you do nothing else, now you need Michael Dogby to be somebody. And if Michael Dogby can be somebody, which, by the way, I am very subtly excited about this potential, because I think he's the type of player that will be very useful in a defense. He'll be very solid. I don't know if he'll be a star, but I think he will be very, very capable with playing time with the type of player that he is. Now, that said, they only have enough on this defensive line if he can not be too rookie-like as a rookie. He can't look like a day three rookie on the field. He needs to be disruptive. And if that's the case, they might have enough, but as we're entering the second preseason game, is that something you want to count on?
No, and that's kind of, you know, what the trouble is we had heard that Brown was playing at a good level, and he had a good shot as a undrafted free agent to make this roster. And I don't want to say that changes anything, but like you said, Dogby and Brown, can you have the? I mean, it's one thing.
It's literally half the defensive line being rookies.
Right, and that's the question now is with Fila gone, do you need to replace one of those potential rookies? Obviously, it's not going to be Zach Allen, but, I mean, a seventh-round pick in Dogby or an undrafted free agent in Brown, do you replace one of those guys with a veteran that you can trust more? And no, we're not talking about maybe one of the veterans on the roster, but we're talking about that waiver wire that seems to come up, you know, all the time. And so as teams start to make cuts, you know, a third or fourth year guy, guess who's going to get the first chance to snap them up. And that's what my question is. I don't know. I don't really know if you can go in with Allen, Dogby and Brown on the roster with your veterans only as Peters, McClain, and Gunter. Like, I just don't know if you can do that. You know, and so the question becomes which one of them goes. I think Brown's probably the safest to go through the practice squad type thing. Because I think the way Dog – obviously it was just a game, but I think the way Dogby played, he would kind of get snapped up quickly. Although Brown did look good too. I mean, they highlighted him quite a bit, and then, you know, he made that play in the backfield against the run that got Larry Fitz fired up on the sideline and had him, you know, greeted when he got pulled off, so –
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, let's talk about potential defensive linemen they could target, whether they're veterans who are free agents now, or perhaps guys who could hit the waiver wire. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk defensive linemen they could target. So veterans who are on the street right now. There are some names out there. Are they worth taking a look at? First and foremost, I wrote an article about three guys. I had one guy that I changed out because I didn't pay attention to the offseason news. So initially, Corey Legit, Doma Tepeko, and then either Muhammad Wilkerson or Stacy McGee. Those are guys I put in there. The problem is that three out of these four guys are coming off of injuries, and Pecco is 34 years old. And I'll be honest, I thought Pecco was going to be a target of this defense. I thought it was inevitable that he was going to sign with the Cardinals since he's a true nose tackle. He is veteran presence. He's played for Vance Joseph the last 2 years. In fact, when he was made head coach, he went out and got Pecco. And I'd have to look at – let me look back at his stats, because I didn't think that they might have had a background together. And it's, oh, so Pecco is a guy that Vance Joseph already knew from his time in Cincinnati. So he knew what he was about, and I thought for sure he'd be signed. That never happened, which means, there's probably some concern there. But if you look at these guys, Corey Legit coming off, I think, as a torn quad. You've got Muhammad Wilkerson, who had the gruesome ankle injury. You've got Stacy McGee, who missed a whole bunch of time this last year for the Redskins. And then Wilkerson also had the DUI off the field last, 2 months ago. So that's another concern as well. Who do you see the Cardinals taking a look at? Is that a possibility of the guys who are on the streets right now?
You know, I don't think Wilkerson, just because of the situation, I don't think that they can pursue him. I just don't see it happening. That's just me. I think Legit makes sense. I asked one of the Chargers guys I know, and he basically said if the Cardinals were interested in he's coming off an injury, right? But if the Cardinals were interested in coming off a season where, he was suspended. Sorry, that's what it was, and didn't do much. He's a rotational guy, but would imagine if you want Fallon, you'd want him. So, I mean, that makes sense. Pecco, 34, you would assume if they were going to do it, they would have already done it, right? Like, he was with Vance. They know him. Why hasn't it happened yet? You know, one name that was interesting to me, and I'm pretty sure he's still a free agent, and I can't find anything on that he's been signed anywhere, but Benny Logan was a guy, unless I'm just missing something, that he's a guy that, you know, he's not, again, we're talking rotation. We're not talking a guy that needs to start and play at a high, you know, at a high percentage of snaps. But he's a you know, a rotational guy that has played in the 3-4. You know, he's been a defensive end and a nose tackle. He was with Tennessee last year. He'll be 30 this year. So, I mean, he's definitely like one of those.
He is still available.
So, I mean, he's not going to be anything, you know, huge. But at the same time, he's a guy that could fit into the system. You kind of look at it. I mean, like a Malik McDowell, like is his face intact? Like, can he play? I'm trying to look through this.
Frosty Rucker.
Frosty. What's going on with David Irving in Dallas? Is he suspended? I feel like something
I believe that was the case.
Yeah. And then you've got, Attire Rubin. I mean, we're going like deep into the depth of like old dudes, like Attire Rubin or Ricky Jean Francois.
Kyle Williams.
Yeah. Speaking of retired, you know, and so that's the thing. So when you look at it, there's not much. He's suspended indefinitely. David Irvin's suspended indefinitely. Okay, so that makes sense. Leggett makes sense. McGee, you know, same type of thing. He makes sense. Logan makes sense. And they're all basically like interchangeable guys, right? They're all 29 going on age 30. They're all coming off of issues or not playing at a high level. I think I would understand the Cardinals' concern with like Wilkerson and Leggett because, you know, suspensions and DUIs and stuff. Like, do you really want to bring that in after you just, I don't know. And so, you know, McGee could be an interesting fit. He's coming off an injury though. So, it's tough, man. I mean, you're talking about August, right? Like, and you're not talking about a ton of talent left out there, or if there is, it's, you know, it's flawed talent.
Well, and the other part is the guys that could end up on the waiver wire might be cap hits, and the Cardinals
right. and they're up against it.
Yeah, they mean they've got nearly $7 million in cap space, but you're.
Like when to you, go that, in with four the, to five, yeah.
Right, and the thing is with the waiver wire, you claim a guy off of waivers, you are inheriting that contract. And so you might be able to find a name like they got out of DJ Swearinger, but he was on a good deal to begin with. So you're either going to get – because what the guys that are mostly – that's well, you do. Here's the thing, though. Vested vets don't go through waivers. So you'd be getting someone who's somewhat unproven, and if you've got a second or a third year player who's landing on waivers, it's usually because he hasn't really panned out.
Yeah, and so that's where you come down to is like what exactly are you looking for? I think the best thing, I mean. You know, you look at Dominic Easley, like I said, Dominic Easley's out there. He's a guy with talent, but his knees are made of papier-mâché. Like, I mean, you just there's not a clear cut answer, and that's what the problem is like with the free agents, with the waivers, or with the vested vets that just become free agents. I mean, that's the other thing is how many guys are going to want to come and play here. That's the other question you have to ask yourself. Like, if a veteran of substance or talent gets let go, is he going to want? If he has some options, is Arizona going to be high on the priority list? This isn't Bruce Arians in 2015, 2016, where he's got some cachet. This is a brand new thing. So, I'm still shocked that Petco's not here, if I'm being completely honest. But it just probably tells you that it's not going to happen, right? I mean, because why wouldn't it have happened if it was going to happen?
Yeah, Vance Joseph clearly liked him. It's got to be a case where he's done, or they know he doesn't have anything left in the tank.
Yeah, either that or the money's just so far apart that, you know, they've reached out and this is what he wants, and you know, we know how Keim kind of deals with that, right? He's like, no, this is what I'll offer. But I mean, and this is all speculation. This is just Jess and I kind of spitballing on the phone over it. But it's interesting because I don't think they can just go forward with what they have. And it was interesting because they made a waiver claim. And it was for an outside linebacker. And that was weird to me. I know we weren't going to talk about this, but that was weird to me because does that mean like Brooks Reed is still struggling? Like, does that mean they're not happy with Andre Branch? Because they brought in a guy in Holland that, you know, Vance Joseph is at, you know, obviously familiar with, coming from the Broncos. And so he probably said like, hey, if this guy becomes available, that he's on the, you know, he's the guy I'd want you to bring in. They had two spots. Now they have one spot. So we're kind of expecting, waiting for a defensive lineman, right? Like, we're just waiting.
Coming up next on the Rise of C-Red podcast, we're going to talk about another player of concern, and that would be Marcus Gilbert. Do we have concerns about this time off? That's coming up next on Rise of C-Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And right tackle Marcus Gilbert, a question mark, a talented question mark, but a question mark nonetheless entering this season. Tweaked his groin last week, missed a day of practice, played in the game, and until Tuesday, did not practice again. Was off Friday. I mean, was off Saturday. He did not practice on Saturday, did not practice on Sunday, did not practice on Monday, and then he got on the field on Tuesday. Saturday, okay, he and DJ Humphries were both out. It was like, okay, Sam feels like a Veterans Day off. Okay. Sunday, you're like, wait a minute, 2 days in a row? But then former Cardinals receivers coach and Steelers receivers coach Daryl Drake, he died suddenly on Sunday morning. It was a rough day for Fitz, Larry Fitzgerald. Marcus Gilbert played for the Steelers last year. Okay, could be bereavement. That's understandable. Monday he wasn't on the field, and now you're starting to scratch your head and you say, wait a minute, you don't give veterans 3 days off in camp for being veterans, right? And he's back on the field on Tuesday. Cliff Kingsbury comes out and says that he's good. We're just trying to make sure he's feeling good for the game and make it to the season, which to me was a shrouded confession that he did have an injury. Maybe he tweaked the injury a little bit in the game, or maybe it was simply a case if this were the regular season he would have played, and they were treating his injury like they would have in the regular season. He would have been out or limited at least those next 3 days and then suited up for the game. But it raises the question, are we going to be able to count on Marcus Gilbert this year? He's our most talented offensive lineman. But he's missed 23 games in 3 years.
Yeah, and that, I mean, we talked about that when it all, you know, came down when they traded for him, is that this was, unfortunately, and fans aren't going to like this at all, so just, avert your ears, fans. This was the low risk, high reward. I mean, that's all this was. This was the Cardinals taking a chance on a, as Jess said, an uber talented offensive lineman, a guy that fit naturally in the pass blocking scheme of what Cliff Kingsbury wants to do. The question has always been, can he make it through a week? I mean, basically that's where we're at with Marcus Gilbert. So when you look at it, you say, I'm okay with them giving him time off as long as he's active every game day. And I think with him, that's kind of the stance you have to take at this point is, like, it is what it is at this point. It's less than optimal, but it's also better than the alternative of him just being out and not playing. And so you look at it and you just kind of go from there. Again, it's not optimal, especially if, you know, a new offense and everything like that, but you want to at least give them the benefit of the doubt that Cliff knows what he's doing.
For me, what I don't like about this is that it feels an awful lot like Evan Mathis. Don't you remember the Evan Mathis?
All through camp.
They kept trying to get him through camp. And then three games into the season, he's on IR.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, the thing that sucks is it's low risk in terms of like their investment, but it's high risk because you're banking on an injury-prone 30-plus-year-old. It's not even like he's young. It's not even like he's DJ Humphreys, you know, where he's you know, like, oh, well, he just needs, you know, to get healthy for 1 year and kind of show he can do it. This is a guy that is on the wrong side of 30. He's not a small guy. I mean, 6'6", 330 pounds, and he's had repeated lower body injuries. You know, he's played in 25 games the last three seasons. It's a tough sale right now, and I just think you have to look at it and go, let's hope this works out. Because
are you ready for Corey Cunningham then?
No, because he didn't look good. I thought Miles didn't look bad, but he's raw. I mean, it's just less than optimal, and so, you know, that was the thing. You wanted to see a little more this year of the offensive line, and they weren't awful except the one, but it looked like a botched snap on A.Q. Shipley's part, and not necessarily a botched snap, but more like, you know, botched snap count. And so, you know, this is just not where you want to be. Not in week two of the preseason.
Right, absolutely. Moving on, we're going to talk a little bit about what's happened in the last week. Coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, we're going to come back and talk about the players whose stock is going up and who has falling stock. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, and now we're up talking about the players in the last week. As we moved forward towards the final cutdowns, as players try to make the 53-man roster, we look at players and because of their play on the field in the preseason game or in their work in practice, who has improved their odds? Who has hurt themselves a little bit in terms of their chance for making the roster? We might make a joke here about Kevin White, who literally hurt himself, thus hurting himself for the roster. But let's kind of go through some of the guys who helped themselves in the game and in the last week to make this roster.
I thought the most obvious one, and you and I have talked about that, he was pretty much a lock anyways, but I thought Trent Sherfield was the most obvious, like, standout from this game. And I think the biggest thing to me was it's obvious because of how important he is, not only as probably the fourth receiver, but the fact that he is their best gunner on special teams right now.
Yes, and for me, and here's the thing. Sherfield, I think, I've thought has been a lock for a long time because of his special teams play, his kind of mentality. But watch out. He could be that number three receiver if when all is said and done, because he knows every receiver position. He is incredibly coachable, is what the coaches say. He, whatever they tell him to do, he does, and he does it at a high level. I've said here on the show that back in the spring, in his locker room, it might have seemed a little crazy that his goal was to start in week one. That might be something that's a possibility, that he's helping himself that much because he flashed during the game, he's doing good things on special teams, and he's continuing to do it in practice as well.
Yeah, and he's just he's an all-around – he's kind of the kid that every coach loves. Like you said, you ask him to do something, he not only does it, but he does it at 100%, and he doesn't ask questions about, like, why.
Who else? Who else for you? And for me, if you're looking at other players that kind of stood out, I think Michael Dogby is one who really sort of helped himself with his penetration. I mean, obviously these guys in the interior don't put up big numbers, but also what I liked to see, there was Andre Branch had a sack, Pete Robertson had a sack. Those guys who are battling more or less for that same spot, those guys showed up. They flashed. They were impressive, and those obviously they helped their own selves. They helped themselves for pretty much the same position, making the decision making even more harder up at this point.
And then you have, I thought Chris Jones continues to be the kind of leader in the clubhouse to benefit from the Patrick Peterson suspension. He just, I don't know, man. Like, he just has a way of making plays.
Another guy for me is TJ Logan. TJ Logan, I think I pay attention to a lot of what the Cardinals, but here's what I've noticed about TJ Logan. One, he's running really well this year. Two, they have him doing a lot more on special teams than I've ever seen him do. I think he lined up as a gunner once. I've seen him working as a gunner. He's playing on more special teams units than he's done in the past. Because before, he was just a returner. He's slated to be potentially a returner, but he's also doing a lot more. And I really like the way he's running has been really good.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that running back position group is interesting because I thought Wes Hills played really well. The undrafted free agent from Slippery Rock, that's in Pennsylvania, by the way, if anybody's wondering. He had a very nice game. And I've said this, he brings a different type of runner than what the Cardinals have. He's actually, TJ Logan runs similarly. He's just not even in the same realm size wise. And so you look at it from that perspective, you know, these guys just, he runs extremely hard, and he's kind of fearless.
And then the last player for me that it's not like his stock increased. I think it sort of quelled some concerns, and that was Zane Gonzalez. He came in, he kicked that extra point, and then he nails that 55-yard field goal. You know, Cardinals fans have been a little bit worried about the kicking position. Gonzalez is a guy everyone loves. He went to ASU. He was great. He was great in college. But he hasn't been consistent in the pros, and didn't bring anyone to compete. But the way the ball's been coming off his foot, and it showed in the game, it really kind of, I think what it is calm some concerns that there might have been about the Cardinals' decision not to bring anyone in. Now, who hurt themselves in there? I think, first of all, obviously, what we have to say, Kevin White is hurting his stock because at the worst time, he's gotten hurt. It's Bryce Butler all over again.
Well, it's not only Bryce Butler. It's the unfortunate story of Kevin White's career. Like, he never stays healthy. This week was tough because I didn't think anybody was miserable, but I thought guys definitely you saw where the concerns are, and you know, we talked about it earlier, kind of just the depth along the defensive line. You know, Dogby looked good, but and Miles Brown wasn't awful, but there was nobody that you looked at and you go, man, this guy needs to play. And the same thing with the linebackers. I thought Dennis Gardeck and Zeke Turner didn't take advantage of the opportunity that they had with Hassan Reddick hurting.
There was one player to me outside of Kevin White whose on-field play really hurt him, and that would be Reese Odhiambo, a guy who's surprising to me has been their number two left tackle all offseason. He was absolutely dreadful in that game. He completely whiffed on a block. He got knocked on his butt. He gave up a sack. I mean, maybe he didn't give up a sack. But he also got hit for two holding penalties. Corey Cunningham got hit with a holding penalty. I think Joshua Miles got hit with a holding penalty. But of all of them, I think Reese Odhiambo really hurt himself, especially since that backup tackle position is something of a concern because you don't have any real experience there. So Odhiambo's got a few starts in 2017. Corey Cunningham's got a few starts from last year as a rookie. And neither one of them stood out. And both of them actually kind of lowered their stock, even though there's really no one ahead of them to replace them. They're in danger of having someone off the streets or off the waiver wires replace them.
Oh, definitely. And I think, you know, that is one of the biggest concerns moving into this weekend is you're going up against a poor Oakland Raiders depth-wise defensive line. And if you see the same type of performance, like, at what point do you just say, like, hey, just let's turn this whole second string over?
Coming up next on the Rise Up C-Rep podcast, we're going to wrap this up. Looking ahead to this game on Thursday, what do we want to see? That's coming up next on the Best Hour of Cardinals Talk on the Web. We're back on the Rise Up C-Rep podcast, the Best Hour of Cardinals Talk on the Web, and we are going to wrap this up. Looking ahead to the preseason game on Thursday against the Oakland Raiders, what specifically do you want to see? I know what I want to see first and foremost. I want to see the first team offense come out and score points. I want Kyler Murray and company to get, specifically, I'd love to see a touchdown, but I want them to score points and to look good doing it.
Yeah, and obviously you want to see the mistakes minimized. You know, they had the Keyshawn Johnson, which was really, I thought, the big, like, kind of issue on the first drive. But even the sack just clean it up a little bit, right? I mean, Cliff talked about that after the game. They need to clean some things up, and that was obvious. But then on the same token, I'd love to see the defense come in and give an actual, like, three and out. Not a, like, get bailed out because they changed the play calling or anything. Like, but come out and drive the tempo and direct kind of what the other dictate the game, as opposed to kind of figuring out the game as it comes to you. Because I feel like they've been sitting back a little too much. Even though, like you said, they only gave up 13 points, it wasn't pretty.
It wasn't. And I don't expect them to come out and be a shutdown team in the running game, but let's not be terrible. The fact that they were the worst team against the run last year, this bad start last week, it's just concerning. Again, you kind of pin it for later, and you're saying, but wait, is this a repeat? I want to see it improve. So preseason game two, it shouldn't look like a disaster. Please don't look like a disaster. It should look better. There should be progress made defensively. That's what I want to see from the first game. I want the defense to improve, and I want the offense to score points.
I think the next thing you want to see is just you want to see who steps up as these things are going on. I mean, the Marcus Gilbert situation, obviously he's going to play, but, you know, we've already talked about it. It's a concern. Who steps up? Is it Joshua Miles? Is it Corey Cunningham? Reese, whatever his name is, that can't block anybody. You know, which guy is the guy that steps up to be kind of that key tackle? You know, because we've already seen that it probably shouldn't be Mason Cole. So somebody needs to step up and kind of claim that lead backup tackle position. The other thing is I want to see if Chris Jones continues to play at this high level. I mentioned him as kind of the riser. I think one more game like this, and he's like he had last week, and he becomes a roster lock. He's a guy that is absolutely going to make this roster.
And then the final, other than general health, I want to see Byron Murphy and Andy Isabella show something. They don't have to be great, but I want them to show something. I want them to have a player or two where you're like, yeah, that's why the Cardinals drafted him, since neither got to play in the preseason opener.
Yeah, and you know what? Wouldn't you like to also see, like, Hakeem Butler make the easy catch once?
Yes. Yes, very much so.
I mean, we didn't talk about him, and maybe we should have mentioned the roller coaster of Butler. But, like, you want, like, the spectacular is awesome. Like, don't get Jess and I wrong. We love the amazing one-handed tiptoe catches. But, like, make the easy catch. Like show that the concentration's there and that the growth is there. Because that's the biggest thing with preseason, right, is growth. Week to week, you look like you're going in the right direction heading towards the season.
Absolutely. Anything else that stands out to you that you want to see in this game? Win, lose, I think, as I continue to say, when it's the first two preseason games and even the fourth preseason game, what you're more than anything looking at are individual players and how they show up, because it's the individual evaluations, who's making a push to make the team and things like that. Who's going to step up? We saw several people kind of shine last week. Will it be the same guys or will there be new guys?
You know, and the other thing I'm interested in, and I texted you about this a little bit last week, was that I'm really interested in the tempo that we see, from the Cardinals and the first team offense. I know we talked about the offense a little bit and that we want to see them score, but I want to see if they go a little faster this week, just a little bit. I'm not saying, you know, breakneck pace, but how are they going to use the tempo, and are they going to start kind of putting it in during the preseason?
And with that, let's wrap up this edition of the Rise of Cigarette podcast. We will be back in a week. We'll be able to talk about the results of this game. We'll look ahead to the third preseason game, which will have the starters playing much longer, is what should happen. So we will be back again in a week. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening, and we will be back again in a week. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Whoa!